Beyond the Baseline is brought to you by the SeatGeek app, the easiest way to find a great deal, pay for your ticket, and get to your seat. Download the SeatGeek app, enter our code BEYOND, get $20 off your first purchase. We're also sponsored by FanDuel, the leader in one-week fantasy football, with more winners, more payouts than any other site. Enter the promo code BEYOND at FanDuel.com. Play a risk-free tournament at up to $10.
People, I think, have a certain idea about what Serbs are like. My guess is that one of the reasons he picked Boris Becker to help him is because Boris seemed to think that on his strapping young shoulders at 17 when he won Wimbledon, he had to sort of change everybody's mind about what Germany is like. Yeah, I think it's kind of the same. It's deep. I'm deep.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. This week, an in-studio guest who has come to our luxurious podcast hatch. She started laughing, so you know who it is. Mary Carrillo in the flesh.
My first ever podcast.
How are you?
This is your first... This is it, baby.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'm thrilled.
That's a lot of pressure.
It is.
There are all sorts of ribald jokes I will refrain from making, but I'm glad I could be your first. Friend, colleague, wit, tennis aficionado. How are we describing you these days? Let's start here.
Okay.
What do you do when you're not doing tennis?
Oh boy, when you asked me if I could be around for this, I think I sent you my November calendar, which had me. Even by my ridiculous, delirious standards, because you know I'm a network surfer. I work for five different networks this month. So I work for Tennis Channel and calling the Singapore finals with our buddy Lindsay Davenport and Paul Anacone. And then I went to Brazil for NBC and shot in Sao Paulo and Salvador for next year's Rio Olympics. Then also for NBC, I did the National Dog Show. I'm also here for HBO Real Sports, our end of the year show. Tomorrow I leave for a couple of days for Boston to work for PBS for an American Experience documentary I'm co-producing. And at the end of this week, I'm going to be appearing, it'll be on the day of the Super Bowl, Hallmark Channel's Kitten Bowl 3.
Oh, I missed this too. You are a network harlot.
I am a strumpet of the highest order. But even by my slutty standards, five networks in 1 month is either... It's either a new high or a new low, depending on how you see it. But yeah, I try to stay busy.
We do this with no notes. We just freelance, which
Excellent.
Is always the best way. There's no
Excellent.
In the C block. We're going to talk about whether Stan Wawrinka's forehand breaks down. So how did you? I'm always happy to praise you, but here's a piece of praise that gets thrown out, which is Mary Carrillo used to be a player?
Yes, exactly.
So how did you...
I didn't play long and I didn't play well.
But how'd you get into this media racket?
It was quite a scam. I was writing, even when I was playing, I would write some stories for, the WTA had a newsletter that came out, and then I started doing a couple of newspaper stories and programs and stuff like that. I wrote a book with Martina Navratilova, a children's tennis book. So I was always writing. I come from a fairly literary-minded family. My brother's a novelist, among other things. And so the year I quit, I was at this is a ridiculous story, but I was at Madison Square Garden for the WTA year-end championships. And I was the last person around. They'd had special guests on, Virginia Wade, Billie Jean King, during the night in between matches. There was one match left.
Were you, as an on-air guest?
I was in the crowd. I'd already, blown the suds off a couple of beers. And I wanted to watch this last match of the night. Most of the crowd was, half the crowd was gone, I'd say. But Tracy also was playing Yvonne Goolagong, and I love that matchup. And so, some desperate woman from the Virginia Slim said, well, Mary Carrillo's around. She could probably. So I got interviewed before that match, and I explained why it was going to be great. And the two guys who were calling the matches, one of them said, why don't we keep her on? So I didn't even have, I had a microphone like the one in front of me right now, but no headset. And I just sort of, talk about just vamping. Riffed. And I just riffed. And luckily for me, and it was a great match. Tracy also won 7-6, 7-6. And I was just going.
Did you have fun?
I had an unbelievable time. I had a great time, but I didn't think anything of it, you know. And a couple of months later, a producer for USA Network happened to have heard me that night. And I just, it was 1980 Wimbledon. I had just lost in the first round to Pam Teeguarden in 14 minutes. I was unemployed. I was thinking of going back to school. I was thinking of going back to teaching because I'd already done a lot of coaching by then. And this guy said, I heard you. You know, would you, we're starting to show some women's tennis matches. Would you want to try your hand? I said, absolutely, which is always my response to anybody who ever asked me, do you feel like, of course.
You want to come into a hub, do a podcast?
Do you want to cover skiing? Do you want to cover figure? Do you want to, have you ever thought of, do you speak Mandarin? Of course. Who doesn't? So from there, I got to do men's tennis, and then I got to do other stuff. And so that was 35 years ago. There you go. I was lucky.
Mentors, I don't know, who kind of, I mean, you know, I'll embarrass you and say you have an outsized influence on teaching me the tricks and sort of, I mean, who took you by the hand and said, don't wear white after Labor Day?
There's a lot of
potholes you want to avoid stepping in.
Well, in tennis, my biggest mentor was Billie Jean King. I was very lucky that we were both living in New York at the time, and she used to, when I was still playing, you know, I'd practice with her, and I sat at her knee and watched her live her life on and off the court. And so she was, I think, my most important man. Media-wise, I mean, there was a crazy guy named Mark Stolberger. He was the guy who had heard me that night at the Garden, you know, not knowing that I'd had a couple of brewskis and I was just kind of riffing or whatever. And he taught me more probably than in the first year. I didn't know how to hold a microphone. I didn't know how to, you know. He'd be talking in my ear, I'd be answering him back on air. He taught me an incredible amount about television and about doing your homework and how to ask a question and how not to answer it in the same question that you're asking. And he did a lot for me. And then I've worked for so many different people and so many different sports. But I have to give Mark Stolberger a lot of credit. And a lot of people don't know who he is. He's not even in the game anymore. And then there were people I've always loved listening to. I have always thought that Vin Scully was the very best at any sport, and I maintain that opinion still to this day. I mean, I'm a great respecter of good storytellers. It's why I liked you before I even ever met you.
Oh,
you tell good stories. And that's something that you can work on and get better at.
So what you do, matches, you mm-hmm. host, you do features, you do longer form,
mm-hmm.
preference. I mean, and also, like, how malleable you think the skill set is? I mean, how different is the drill of covering a live tennis match than doing a real sports piece?
It's different. I mean, real sports is, we try to make it serious journalism, you know. It's a good show. It's a, you know, and I can do a piece. I had a piece on last month that was close to 20 minutes long. I mean, with no commercials. That's a nice, long, patient, textured piece. So when you have an address like that where you can really lay down and do some nice work, I love that kind of work. I like doing features. This will be my fifth Stray Olympics where I'm doing not just player profiles, but athlete profiles, but historical features. I was on a former slave plantation last week in Salvador, not knowing until I got there that after Nigeria, there are more blacks in Brazil than any other country in the world because they had more slaves and for longer than any other country in the world. So, I mean, I like that kind of stuff too. I love working on documentaries. Long form storytelling is my favorite. There's no money in it for me yet. I think this is my seventh or eighth, but I love that process. I mean, more than anything, I guess I like swinging from the trees. I like doing other things. Tennis is the only sport I'm at all fluent in, but I love sports and I love the athletic heart, and I will follow it anywhere.
And you like the process of this too. I mean, you'll go down and shoot that feature for the Rio coverage on NBC, But I assume you're going to see it several times in the production, mm-hmm. and you're going to look over someone's shoulder as they put it together. You don't
go there,
appear on camera, and first time you see it.
No, I mean, we get to talk about it a lot, and we, you know, I mean, that's the best part about this whole process, as I know you're finding out, is how collaborative it is and how you can spitball ideas, and some of them stick to the wall and some of them don't. But, you know, it's nice to be part of something where your voice is really heard. And you can, you know, make a lot of changes and adjustments. And you think you're going in with one story, and a whole different story pops out instead. And that's always kind of great, too. And I've had stories that have fallen away. I thought, wow, this is going to be good. And then you go there, and you realize it's not really. Or you realize, then you come to know that something is better in print than it is on television. So there's so many different things to find out about what makes a good story.
Great story. How do we support it?
Right.
Do you have a white whale? I mean, is there one story that, boy, you wish you could tell?
I'm trying to, offhand, I can't think of one that I'm dying to tell. There is a story I would love to do, and I'm just not sure. Again, I think it's better written. Maybe you should write it instead of me. But I, in terms of tennis, when Martina Navratilova went back to Prague to play, you know, as an American against.
Oh, right, right. She tells it. Yeah, right.
And
right.
that's unfortunately, there weren't that many people who are around who. Bud Collins was at that thing, and he wrote about it beautifully. And I read an account of his many years ago that inspired me to think that would be a terrific story to tell. Because, so here's Martina, and for many years they wouldn't even put her name in newspapers. They wouldn't show her matches on television. And now she's going back, and she wasn't sure how she'd be accepted. And you know, and there was a train that passed by the court where they were playing this Fed Cup tie, and the train slowed down for about 10 minutes, and people popped out of the windows to watch Martina play Hanna Monlikova or something. I mean, that to me sounds like I would love to get Chrissy and Pam and, you know, everybody and Hanna Monlikova and all the people who are involved in that. I just think that's just one of the great stories. And again, I just don't know that there's visual support for it.
Did anyone get that on their phone?
I think that's
great.
Wouldn't
that
be a good story?
Yeah, yeah.
I would, if there's a tennis story I could do right now, I would try to. And I've talked to Martina about it, and she's all for it. But again, I just don't know how much footage exists and how much, you know. But I think that would be, I think it's a wonderful story. I would love to listen to Martina tell it along with her friends.
See, if you were writing, you can cheat. You don't need the images, and you get Martina to give you a great interview, and you can kind of recreate the scene.
Yes, yes.
I would say Andre and Steffi. Has anyone really cracked that one? And I feel like it's almost like the Williams sisters. We take it for granted. I mean, here are these two titans.
Has anyone
of
cracked
the
Williams sisters for that matter?
Well, that's a great question.
I mean, honestly, they circle the wagon trains more than even Steffi did, I think. I mean, Graf was always very private, and of course she's married to one of the most public personas in the history of tennis.
Right.
You know? So I think there are, yeah.
What do you think? You want to talk about the Williams sisters?
Sure, I'll do whatever you want. I'm here.
I do not disagree with you. It is not incumbent upon them to lay themselves bare for public plumbing, but you do have a sense that there's a lot there that still hasn't been told. Think we ever get that?
I'd be surprised, to tell you the truth. Again, I happen to admire privacy.
Absolutely, yeah.
There really is, right. And it's in short supply, it seems, these days. And I always liked that Graf, you know, I covered Graf. I'm, you know, right from the start of her career, and when things were happening and her father was in all kinds of problems, personal problems, and you know, getting sued for back taxes or whatever he had so many. I liked that Steffi put up his firewall, and she let you know right that there was no chance she was gonna let you climb over that thing. No chance. And I like that she circled the wagon trains, just as the Williams sisters do. A lot of stuff has happened in that family, and they keep it inside. And we both listened to Serena say things, and you listen to her, and you at the Open when she lost to Vinci, she said she didn't feel the pressure. Of course, she felt the pressure.
Right.
Do not believe what your eyes are telling. I think the only one in that family that I would really like to hear from, that I would trust, is Orosine. Because I think that, you know, Serena will spin something, and her, God knows her father has done that, you know, on and off for many years. And Venus is very reticent by nature, I believe, in those ways. Orosine, I think, is the real, if I could get one member of the Williams family, you know, to have dinner with, like a real long dinner, I'd want to speak to Orosine more than anybody else, because I don't think she feels like, she doesn't say much.
No, she's an honest
But
person,
when she right. says stuff, it's the truth.
Right.
I always sense that when she tells you something, when she says something, she wants to tell the truth. And I really admire that about her.
Hold that thought, Mary. We're going to pay some bills real quick. Whether it's the NFL, college football, college basketball, or the NBA, sports fans have an exciting few months ahead. Next time you head to the stadium or your favorite concert venue, try the SeatGeek app. It's easy. Find the best deals on tickets. And when you use our code BEYOND, you get a check back for $20. Here's how it works. It's quite simple. Download the SeatGeek app on your iPhone or Android. It's free. Takes less than a minute. Then search for your event. Find a great deal. Enter the code BEYOND. And when you complete the purchase, SeatGeek will send you $20 right to your home. It's that easy. SeatGeek pulls in options from hundreds of sellers online. They show you the best deal automatically. We often liken it here to Ticket's version of Kayak. You're seeing virtually every available option. Pick the best deal. The mobile app makes it easy. Again, download the app today. Enter the code BEYOND. SeatGeek will then send you $20 once you've made your first purchase. Go to the game, go to the arena, go to the stadium, go to the tennis venue. Get the best deals on sports and concert tickets. Use the SeatGeek app and our code BEYOND and save $20. So here comes a backwards transition. Watch this.
All right.
Ronda Rousey.
Okay.
We talk about, you talk about the complete opposite. I mean, just an Uzi of candor. So you follow
You've met her.
Her,
haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, and it was
Is she wide
just,
open?
It was, like, we all want candor. We all want athletes to be open. This got to the point where I was sort of like, much information.
I don't want candor.
You, it got uncomfortable in how, but anyway.
In what way? How are you?
This was, there were some, I would say, graphic discussions. There were some, sort of one, almost sort of jarringly candid to the point of like.
That you weren't probing
we
for.
We need to put, exactly.
Okay. But, you're not going to get from me.
So Ronda Rousey is a wildly public figure.
Right.
Fought the other night and lost. She has a
to that Aussie
invincibility.
Babe.
No, it was in Australia. It was in Melbourne, which is hilarious in its own right for those of us who go to Melbourne. But she's from New Mexico.
Oh, she's from New Mexico?
The woman who beat her.
I didn't know that.
So
what the hell were they doing in Australia?
They're trying to spread the gospel of cage fighting.
Okay.
So Ronda Rousey... Yeah. Is this wildly public figure.
Yes.
And loses badly. I mean, she just got her ass kicked. And
I think
now,
it was her jaw, but go ahead.
Well, she got, yeah, well, that too. Yeah, right. So now this whole narrative has switched to, will she ever be the same?
Right.
Greatest upset of all time. And I think part of what fueled this is how open she was.
Right.
And fueling her own mystique. But I wonder, I keep thinking about Serena Williams and... You have this celebrity who has this aura that's predicated on invincibility, and she loses this fight, and the whole Ronda Rousey narrative is flipped. This is a long way of setting you up for a Serena question,
Okay. Which
is, where do you think she is right now? I mean, I think it's a strange thing where she had this wonderful year, and yet we still have this lingering sense that she lost the last match we saw her play.
Yeah.
It was not a proud performance. In the, like you say, clearly nervous.
Yes.
Where is she right now?
Do you think if somebody asked Serena right now, did you lose because of your nerves? Do you think 2 months on she would tell the truth? She would say, yeah, of course.
Is it you or me with a microphone, or is it someone in her?
No,
I think of her.
Her mom said right after the match that it got to her.
Oh, Patrick said she could barely move.
No, that's what I'm saying. But is Serena 2 months on? Would Serena say?
Is she saying it to the public?
Yeah, to the press.
Is she saying it to her friend? Oh, I think.
Will she just stand by that? Because I think that is part of it all. I mean, one of the remarkable things about watching John McEnroe play his career was how openly and willingly he would admit in the middle of a match that he was choking. Remember, he'd grab at his neck and that was such a release for him, because at the same time, by the time he had let go of his neck, he was like past it. He said, yeah, of course I choked, and now I'm going to try not to choke. Now I'm going to go, and then invariably he would serve in volley and win the next point. I mean, I think that's important. I think to, you know, you have to, it's why I like telling long-form stories. It's why, to me, the documentaries that I enjoy, they always have, it's always, they involve the R words, you know? It's regret, reticence, resilience, recovery, renewal. I mean, those kind of things are, to me, what makes, especially
there are no straight-line trajectories.
Exactly. So where do I think Serena is? I honestly hope that she's reconciled. Look, it was a rough year for her all around. She played, you know, some very sticky-looking tennis all throughout the French Open and won it anyway.
Right.
You know, at Wimbledon, she looked better. At the Open, she looked good for a couple of rounds. I thought she looked good against her sister and against Madison. And then it got to her. And I think the best thing you can do is release yourself of that. You know, just let it go. So if she has let it go by now, which I'm assuming she has, I mean, I'm assuming she has. I think she'll be. I still think she can win a couple of majors next year.
She's winning multiple majors.
Oh,
in 2016.
If not her, who?
Well, that's the other.
I mean, that's the other part. You know, I mean, you know, I think Sharapova can still win majors, and I think Mood to the Goo, Garbiñe Muguruza.
You're still
not sure about Muguruza. You're not sure about her as a player or as a person.
Both. I mean, I thought that. Okay. Post-Wimbledon stretch was very dicey.
Where she busted up with the coach.
I think there's a lot of game there, but you never know. I mean, we said that.
I think she can win majors. I'm a big fan of hers. I just and I like how hungry she is for it.
What about joining this other discussion point?
What else?
Which rockets around social media, which is why does Novak Djokovic not get as much respect as his feats merit?
I think he deserves it. I think he is a remarkable fellow. I mean, to come up at a time when he's two of the all-time greats, and he had to navigate his way past both of them and figure out how to defeat two very different and remarkable skill sets, and then come out on top of that. He's also very, very bright. He spends every single part of his day, it seems, every part of his day is designed to make him a better tennis player. I mean, he doesn't take anything for granted. He doesn't take any shortcuts. And now he's a father as well, and he seems besotted with that idea.
Right.
I mean, this is a thoroughgoing professional, and I don't know how. I think the defiance that he plays with grates on some people.
I was going to say, so what's our, is it a step?
But I mean, all right, well, let me ask you this.
I have two pet theories, but you go first.
I mean, I think he's, and you know, people I think have a certain idea about what Serbs are like, right? That whole Eastern European thing.
Well, what about even an ignorance? Never mind a value judgment. Like, oh, it's a guy from Switzerland. I can ride. It's hiding in the Alps and chocolate and watches and Nadal's fishing. And I love Spain. We went to Barcelona for Christmas. And you say Serbia, and it's not even value judgments and history of the Balkans. It's just,
but
can't relate.
I think that's kind of true. And I think my guess is that one of the reasons he picked Boris Becker to help him is because Boris seemed to think that on his strapping young shoulders at 17 when he won Wimbledon, he had to sort of change everybody's mind about what Germany is like, you know? I mean, Boris, remember, he hated the nickname Boom Boom Becker and all that kind of stuff. And he sort of, I don't know, he brought it up more than I think people.
That's really interesting. Germany in the late 80s in transition.
You're acting like it, Jamie.
I have never heard
He's
anything.
Acting like it's a big surprise. Jamie's producing this podcast. You're acting like it's a surprise. I said something interesting.
No, so that everybody said, why the hell Becker? Is
that made sense
to me. Personality match, and one's a grass court specialist.
Yeah, I got that one.
That's real. No, but you think about where Germany was in the late 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of the same.
That's.
It's deep. I'm deep.
That's a fantastic point.
But anyway, no. So here's it. Let's talk about if you could have dinner with somebody. Would you rather have dinner with Rafa Nadal or Novak Djokovic? I'd take Novak every day of that week. What's I just would. Because he is, again, he's so bright. He speaks English better than any other player on the tour, even Americans and Brits.
That includes, right.
When he won a tournament in China, he gave part of his speech in Chinese. I mean, this is a guy who, he couldn't try harder. I think part of it is that maybe people think he tries too hard to win over fans. And again, I don't even mind that, because I think what he has done is largely remarkable.
I think it's interesting too that, you know, he's tweeting out articles from The Economist.
Oh, yeah.
And clearly, you know, he comes here. You know, he did the weekend before the U.S. Open, he went to the U.N. for some black tie dinner. Mm. That's not what tennis players tend to do.
No, he's
and
global.
This has had no impact. I mean, sometimes we have this. The athletes say, oh, I can't just be a machine and I have outside interests. And he has outside interests that seem to have no impact on his tennis whatsoever.
I know it. I'm a great respecter of that. I'm a great admirer of everything he wants to be and the kind of image he wants to portray for his country. I just think there's a lot to that guy.
And
I don't mind watching that guy win at all.
Well, I was going to say, that was my next question, which is, what about when the ball's in play?
I mean, obviously, I'm always going to love watching Roger Federer play, because he makes what I know to be a very hard sport look impossibly easy. And there's something beautiful. I like watching people make hard things look easy, whether it's a musician or an artist or an actor or, you know, that to me is just such a sign of excellence.
Here at the SI Podcast Network, we have four shows that cover the NFL, including the SI Fantasy Football Podcast, hosted by Michael Beller. It's expressly dedicated to helping you win your league. If you're not playing fantasy football, you are likely in the minority, but that can change. This is your chance to get in on the action now when you use my code BEYOND, BEYOND, at FanDuel.com. Play a risk-free tournament for up to $10. FanDuel is the best place to play 1 week fantasy football. Building a team is easy. It's fun. It's short. No worries that Tony Romo is your quarterback and suddenly your season is tanked. Entry fees start as low as just $1. There's a league for everyone. NBA, NHL, they're here as well. Tennis is sure to follow. FanDuel is not just a huge tournament. Again, set up a private league. Play against your friends anytime, anywhere. Keep up with your buddies who don't live close by. Win some money in the process. To get started, go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use the code BEYOND, and sign up now. Again, here's the deal. The contest is anyone you want. It's up to $10. Sign on, use BEYOND. FanDuel.com, FANDUEL.com. Try it out today. So our media critic here, fellow podcaster, Richard Deitch. You know Richard.
Of course.
He, and I think very, very correctly, quickly, highlights the conflicts of interest that plague our sport.
Mm-hmm.
Our sport. the sport.
A conflict, that the cornerstone of our sport is conflicts of interest.
Our founding fathers brought forth.
It's the bedrock on which this game was created.
Why? Just because management agencies. I mean, everyone has their favorite one. My favorite is the management agencies that represent players, but also tournaments and are lobbying to keep purses down depress the wages of the players they represent.
You got a problem with that? You got a problem.
As an honest broker, how do you? I feel like they're different degrees, and in a small sport, everyone's going to have a couple of awkward moments.
Yes.
How do you steer clear of this?
I just do. I mean, I
you do too.
I do, and it's important for me, but not to have any conflicts. I mean, I want to be able to say what I think and mean what I say, and that gets me in trouble sometimes. And I'll go into the penalty box and I'll serve my time and I'll come out again.
Is that tour related? Is that
you're not
going to get the easy suite?
Dinner
check by going into the luxury suites. And
well, no, if I will say something, and before it's past my teeth and into the ozone, I know that an agent's going to be furious, or a mother, or the WTA, or the ATP, or the ITF, or everybody is, you know, I tend to say what I think, and I'd like to think that it's pretty well founded, and I'm willing to, I don't want to have to be conflicted about it. My attitude is, if someone, I was never a famous tennis player, I don't have a huge, you know, name in those ways. So if someone's going to pay me to call mattress for them, I'm assuming it's because they value at some level what I think. So I'm going to tell them what I think, you know, and you know, and but let me just say, we both work for Tennis Channel. I've worked for a lot of different people over the years, and I work with plenty of people who have conflicts of interest, who have, you know, they're either coaching or they're doing something. And again, I personally wouldn't put myself in that position because I probably would roll around at night in bed and have a little trouble sleeping. But I have gotten more information from those people, you know, and
I
glean so much from them. I ask them things, and a lot of times they'll say, all right, well, you can't use it
on air.
Right. And I will say to them, I don't want to use it. I just need to know it.
I just don't want to step in on the landmine.
This press release makes no sense to me. Tell me what this really is. From all different networks, people have been so generous to me, not just Lindsay and Paul Annacone. I mean, it's Chris Everett has been a great help. She's had so many people come through her academy. Darren Cahill is very generous with his thoughts. And these, you know, they know. And again, there are times when they'll say, you can't say this, but I'll say, tell me what you can, tell me what you will, and tell me what I can't say, and tell me what I can't say. And so I use those people, you know, and I consort with them, and I trust them, and I make use of the fact that they that they have so many different ways to, you know, to,
you're saying
to
it's
turn
always
a check.
Been thus. I mean, this
well,
is
pretty much. And again, I'm not saying that. And the funny thing is, you know, we both work with Justin Gimelsov on Tennis Channel, and Justin knows more about the machinations of the ATP and all the politics of this sport than anybody I know of, anyway.
Right.
And I'll ask him something very inside, you know, and he'll say, sometimes he'll tell me, sometimes he'll say, Mayor, you do not want to know how that sausage is made. and then sometimes I'll say to him, actually, I do. And then he'll tell me, I say, ooh, you're right, I really didn't want to know how that. But I mean, that is.
The walking tour of the sausage factory.
There are some sausages you really don't want to go near, but. Yes, I mean, it exists, and I think everybody, and we've had this conversation before, John, like I tend to judge people and judge myself by what they say no to, you know, how far will you bend? What is okay and what isn't okay? And you know, we all land in different places on that. And my feeling is, and I've left, you know, I left a network because there are too many conflicts for me to deal with. You know, not just among the announcers, which is one thing, but just the network itself. And so, I mean, in the end, you pick the hill you die on, but you also pick the hill you live on. And it depends on what you can take and what kind of people you want to work with and how much you want to work and what you want to do with your days. That stuff's important.
So. What is it about this sport? I mean, I feel like I've never seen never mind a sport.
Wait,
I've
you
never
cover
seen
a lot of sports. There's nothing like tennis.
There's nothing like tennis. But I'm also. I mean, you love it. I love it. I mean, the truth is, we're lucky enough so that if tennis disappeared tomorrow, we would find other things to do. I mean, we're here by choice. This isn't
right.
You know, the only. But I feel like I've never seen an enterprise, never mind a sport, that beats itself up. So regularly, everyone's got an idea of how to improve it, and this sucks and that sucks. Let's zig where everyone else zags. Why is it like that? No, the opposite. No, why? What's appealing about this sport? Why is it you've got a dozen networks you could work for? What is it about tennis and Tennis Channel and covering the sport and commentating that is still like?
Well, what are
the virtues and not the vices?
I hearken back to an article I read about Arthur Ashe, and this was back in the 70s. So the tours were erupting and exploding, and things were going on, and the Handsome Eight were around, and the WTA had just formed, and this and that. And Arthur Ashe was asked, you know, what he thought of it all, and he said, "Tennis is a healthy mess." And I love that he knocked those two words together, because at times I feel like, you know, tennis is an unhealthy mess too, but I like I think it's a beautiful game. I happen to like racket sports. I think it's a beautiful tool, and I love that you can play it any way you want to play it.
Right.
You know, you can stand back, or you can come in, or you can. And there's no other sport that's played on so many different surfaces, and that changes a lot. I mean, most sports are either played on grass or on, you know, wood or whatever, and tennis is played on hard courts and clay courts and grass courts and indoors, and I mean, so that changes the way, you know, you have to play your style and of attack or defense. And I think it's a beautiful game. You know, the sport can kind of drive me nuts, but the game itself of tennis.
Did you feel like a deep
beautiful.
Dark?
I think it's beautiful.
You know what Arthur once said about Jimmy Connors?
Which
he's,
one?
He's an asshole, but he's our asshole. I feel like a healthy mess is sort of the collective version
of that. Isn't that right?
But I always feel like the dirty secret. I mean, you say it drives you nuts.
Yeah.
And it does. And you say this is a sport that can't get out of its way.
Yes.
And some of these decisions, you bang ahead. But I also feel like journalistically, from a storytelling,
yeah.
from an arc, from Rees.
Yes.
God, I'd rather do this than cover the NFL.
I think so. And honestly, I'm the first, and I don't like football, and it scares me. I mean, the concussion stuff is devastating, I think, to somebody like me. But there is no, I don't know, there's a better sport on television than football. I mean, all of the camera angles and all the strategy and all the, it's
no,
war
it's
games.
For,
I mean, it's made for television,
right.
But I think tennis, too, has got a lot going for it because it's just two people out there, and there's no helmets. There's nothing to block the expressions on the faces of people. I, you know, when HD came along, not only did I love how clearly you got to see the ball and how you can see the skid marks on clay courts, but you got to see the faces. You got to see sweat drip off of somebody's chin. And so I think tennis is it's a very televisable sport. And if it's done the right way, you can tell stories in between points and in between. It used to drive me. We were talking about Steffi Graf before. The hardest person to call to tell a story about was Steffi Graf because she played so fast. I would beg my producer sometimes,
right.
just instead of showing a replay, I really got to tell this story about, you know, one of her German Shepherds.
Yep.
So don't give me give me two replays, because she played so quickly. And so there are things that drive me crazy that don't drive other people crazy about tennis. It doesn't drive
like
me crazy, like let cords, I don't.
Oh, wow. Well,
let cords, like, really? You really think that takes a lot of, we really need to speed up the sport by playing let cords? And that means, like, old people all over the country are going to have to start playing let cords, and in doubles, it'll bounce off a net and you can kill somebody with
right.
it. I mean, to my mind, if you're really trying to speed up the game, you know, enforce the time between points rule. Enforce
right.
the challenge mosey. Every time somebody, you know, they wander up before they challenge. Like, there are plenty of ways to
yeah,
speed
exactly.
up.
Well, the toweling.
The toweling is ridiculous. The picking at your shorts takes away. Like, so, you know, all these phony injury timeouts and call the trainer. And so we all have different things that drive us nuts.
Right.
You know, grunting, to my mind, it was supposed to be dealt with in 2012.
How'd that go?
I mean, so we all have things. And my... Like an idiot, I tend to think of myself as I'm supposed to be a guardian of this sport. I adore it. I adore it, you know. And I'm trying. Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I have to protect it, the good of it, and so when people say you're so critical of, and they're like, no, I'm doing it because I think it's important, and I don't want to be agnostic about something that I think is detrimental to the sport. So. Again, I happen to like that tennis is so unique a sport. It's so different from other sports. And I think it should be, I think the stuff that makes it special should be preserved. I'm not one of those people who says, we got to make it all these new, and it's, you know, changes are only good if the changes are good.
Right. Right.
Just to change it because basketball did it. Like, I don't care if basketball did it. That's great. But this is tennis. This is a different sport. And different people play it and different people watch it. And I think you just got to take care with that stuff.
What about, you say to what end? I say, well, it could get bigger. Someone had an interesting point. They said, you know what? What if it is what it is, and it's a nice niche sport, and it's not going to be the NFL, and we're not going to double our ratings?
Well, it's not going to be NFL is the biggest sport in this country because people gamble on it. I mean, that's it, right?
Right.
Is there any other? I mean, it's obvious again, and I'm the first to admit that it's an amazing sport to watch on TV. But the reason it's big,
but it also all these sort of you check the boxes, and there's violence, and there's scarcity of product, and right. And I think whether the NFL talks about it or not, I mean, you're right. This gambling is not just another level of engagement for fans, but also means people are watching these blowouts.
Exactly.
The game may not the game may be in doubt, but the spread or my fantasy football team.
Exactly.
I feel like tennis has not done a particularly good job of taking advantage of some of these audience trends.
Like what?
The UFC is popular because they built a reality show around it. The NFL is
right.
The NFL right. doesn't just like this. The NFL is an investor in daily fantasy, and you sort of tennis is very much on the sidelines with
right.
social media and with
and everyone's trying to they all want to lower their demographics. You know, I think the average Olympic viewer who watches it on TV is like between 55 and 70. Like so, if all of a sudden you want all right, let's bring in younger sports. Let's have snowboarding and let's have you know.
Half
so
pipe.
And you know when you look at that, I mean I've looked at those things. And I'm not sure what to do with any of it, but
this demographic data.
Yeah, the demographic. Like, yeah, right. This is who watches basketball. This is who watches football. This is who. I mean, very. Let's face it. Very few sports that are watched are also played. I mean, a lot of people who watch tennis actually play it.
That's so, right, right.
So well, I mean, I think that's something we got going for
well,
us.
Well, tennis also is much better as far as a gender divide.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's right. So, I mean, there.
A lot of virtues here to this.
I'm still a great believer in it, and I will always try very hard to express that in no matter what I like there are things about tennis that I think shouldn't go away, and there are plenty of things that should, but yeah, I like this sport. I think it's a very pretty sport.
Ooh, that's a good place to end, I would say.
All right.
As a storyteller, what do you think? We were all over the place.
We kind of sprayed
Ronda
the room.
Rousey. We talked about Prague in the 70s. And
That tends to happen when we start talking.
That's great. That's the beauty of the podcast, though.
I liked it. So this is my first podcast.
You did great.
Are you going to ever have me back? Or
absolutely. We're going to have a new office. We're going to have a new podcast studio.
Wow, even bigger than better than this?
Maybe we'll do another one in Australia. We can go mobile.
Okay.
You'll be in Australia?
I don't know. I haven't been asked yet.
I'll ask you.
All right.
All right. That was our guest today. Terrific guest, as you would have predicted, Mary Carrillo. We thank her for coming by live and in person. We're going to go get some lunch. In the meantime, thanks again to everyone for listening. Keep the suggestions coming. One of you mentioned it was time we got Mary Carrillo on the show, and we tried to comply with that. So feel free to keep your suggestions coming. Always a pleasure. Thanks for listening. We'll do it again next week.